following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... We love the earth. Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator... Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. It is Monday, October 4th, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for the next 60 minutes of news, talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. We're coming to you live and direct from Rolla J Studios right here in beautiful Potland, Oregon. And normally at this time, I would be introducing you to our engineer and board operator, Ganja John, but I have the most amazing news to give you from this weekend. No, it's not that the Ducks won and jumped above my Boise State team. Although that's, I'm sure, something that John's very happy about as well. But no, the word is in. We got the phone call this morning. Ganja John is getting his new kidney. Yes, that's right. He's getting his new kidney. Apparently, there was a young man who died of a drug overdose in Tennessee who turns out to be a 6-for-6 match. They have all these different things they have to match for, you know, organ transplants, your blood type, the Rh type, the tissue types, all these different types. This guy's a 6-for-6 match. I talked to John earlier today and he said, dude, it's like this guy could be my brother. We are so genetically alike. So the chances that organ will take and not be rejected are extremely good when it's a 6-for-6 match. He should be in the hospital. We'll see him later this afternoon. Maybe he'll poke in on the camera, but he should be in the hospital today at 6 p.m. to get his new kidney. But also on our show, joining us from our Astoria studio, is my good friend and quarter sister, Cannabis Carrie.
Yes, we are so excited about John and his new kidney.
Oh, yeah, and I'm here having to...
Out there?
Yeah, we're good. I have to run everything all by myself here, so I fix everything.
Yeah, but no complaints because we're so excited about John and this news. We heard late last night, and he was excited. He sounded like a little kid, and this kind of thing is very unexpected, but hoped for and wished for. And so hopefully by tonight, we will have a better, even a better news that it went really well.
Yeah, and today in hour two for our Toker Talk Radio, I'm going to take calls from everyone out there who wants to wish Ganja John good luck or happy healing or happy new kidney. I don't know what you wish someone when they get a kidney. Happy Kidney Day? I don't know. But if you've got those wishes and you want to get them to Ganja John, we're going to do a show, you know, our Toker Talk Radio in hour two. I'll video record it as well so that John can watch it while he's recovering. So we'll get all your well wishes in hour two. But in hour one, we start off with our hemp headlines, which Carrie brings to us right after this first break coming up. So Carrie, what's in the news today?
Well, I do love this time of year because it is festival season. So I'm going to talk about another festival that we had this weekend in our great country. Also, a CBS News reporter is in a little hot water over some gardening. And we're going to go to Washington State where the CDC has filed a suit.
Okay, all that news coming up right after our first break here. And also on today's show, we get our Toker Tunes, our daily Toker Tunes. Today is Roots Monday, so Carrie will be bringing us some music, kind of an interesting song. She wasn't even sure she was going to play it, but we'll bring it to you right here at 20 after the hour. At 30 past the hour, we're going to get into some cannabis conversations, the war on marijuana and its racist enforcement. Dr. Harry Levine from Queens College, New York, and his presentation at the Normal National Conference. Very interesting data. And at the end of the show, some radical ranting against the cannabis.
You're listening to Normal Show Live.
Right back after this.
Of the Marijuana Nation.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 20s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stop arresting law-abiding citizens because they prefer marijuana over alcohol. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges. We're unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people each year simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They're average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORMAL, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
You want to legalize it? Call your congressman today. 202-224-3121. It's free, it's easy, and you don't even have to give your name, just your zip code, and they'll hook you up to your congressman. Call 202-224-3121 and tell Congress you support marijuana legalization.
Liberate your mind. Liberate your mind.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
This last weekend was another great time for cannabis consumers to enjoy their freedom to peacefully assemble. Madison, Wisconsin is the home to one of the oldest cannabis events still going strong. The 40th annual Great Midwestern Marijuana Harvest Festival was held this weekend with hundreds of marijuana advocates marching down State Street in Madison and most of the attendees ending the event with a rally on the Capitol steps. Heavy police presence monitored the crowd throughout the event, and Ben Maisel, one of the event organizers, warned the crowd several times that even though they were there to educate the public on cannabis laws and hemp cultivation, smoking at the rally involved taking a legal risk. He told the crowd numerous times that lighting up within 10 feet of a cop will most likely end in getting ticketed. But in the end, Madison Police Sergeant Jason Ostringa said that he was not aware of any arrests or citations related to the event. The fall annual tradition in Madison saw thousands of attendees and included a lineup of bands, guest speakers, and vendors. The Is My Medicine Legal Yet spokesperson Gary Stork and medical cannabis advocate Jackie Rickert, who suffers from Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, urged supporters to continue advocating for medical marijuana legislation in Wisconsin. Many of the protesters at the state capitol spoke against Wisconsin legislators who refused to pass the Jackie Rickert Medical Marijuana Act last year. Members of the Wisconsin legislature ended up not voting on the act, which had considerable support in the state Congress and among the voters of Wisconsin.
Yeah, that was pretty shameful, those lawmakers in Wisconsin just punting on the Jackie Rickert Act. Last year, I was able to go to the Great Midwestern Harvest Fest and met up with Ben and Gary and also Jackie Rickert. We did an interview in the hotel room, as a matter of fact. And this woman, she's in a wheelchair. She's been struggling all her life with her disability. And day after day, month after month, she is fighting to bring medical marijuana to the state of Wisconsin, where it's overwhelmingly popular. The people are behind it. Again, it's the legislators that are afraid to take a stand. And I really am having trouble understanding why at this point any legislature in any state is afraid to take a stand on medical marijuana. It's not like they're the first ones to stick their neck out. There's already 14 states that have legalized the medicinal use of marijuana. And this Wisconsin law fits along the guidelines of most of the rest of those laws as well. It's not like it's going way out of its way to grant a whole bunch of conditions that other states don't grant, or to grant limits of medicine and plant growing that are way higher than anyone else's. No, it's a pretty middle-of-the-road medical marijuana bill. So to claim that there's some reason that we can't pass this because we don't want to send the wrong message to the children, or we're politically afraid, or we don't know how our supporters will react to that, these are all disingenuous. What it really comes down to is these legislators' personal dislike of cannabis and cannabis consumers. It's something that's been a term that's been used a couple times in the media lately, hippie punching. The idea that when somebody needs a scapegoat, when somebody politically needs somebody to beat up on, there's always some left-wing progressive cause, some hippie to punch that can make that person look tough on crime. That's what this is really all about. So folks in Wisconsin, get involved with Madison Normal. Get involved with Is My Medicine Legal Yet? Madison Normal's at madisonnormal.org. Is My Medicine Legal Yet? Is at immly.org.
Award-winning CBS radio news reporter and radio bureau manager Howard Arenstein was arrested for growing marijuana with intent to distribute. Arenstein, along with his wife, were arrested in D.C. on Saturday. Arenstein and his wife, Orly Azule, or Orly Katz as she's more known, well-known as, who is a newspaper reporter, were living with 8-foot-tall cannabis plants in the backyard of their posh Georgetown neighborhood. According to the New York Daily News, Washington, D.C. officers found the plants after receiving a complaint about the couple growing marijuana in their fenced-in backyard. Going on the complaint, the police obtained a search warrant, then raided Arenstein's home, where they found 11 very tall plants outside and some packaged marijuana, along with paraphernalia, inside the home. Various news reports are saying that the marijuana inside the home was 6 2-ounce bags of cannabis. Arenstein served as a radio bureau manager for CBS News Washington and has won awards for journalism for CBS Radio. He's been honored with the prestigious Edward R. Murrow Award twice for his work. He has supervised coverage and reported on major Washington stories like the disputed 2000 presidential election, the September 11th hijackings, the wars in the Middle East, and the D.C. area sniper shootings. He oversaw the entire impeachment process of President Bill Clinton for CBS News. He is the executive producer of the CBS News Weekend Roundup, airing nationally on hundreds of CBS News affiliated stations. Now, his wife is a correspondent for one of the largest newspapers in Israel. Arenstein is 60 years old. His wife is 57, and they have 4 children. And so far, neither CBS nor Arenstein have given any comments about the incident.
Boy, this is 11 8-foot plants and 6 2-ounce bags of cannabis. That's going to be a tough charge that's going to come against Arenstein here. And, you know, as I first read this story over the weekend, I was reading some of the comments from people online. They were saying, you know, why would this guy do this? He's involved in CBS News. As if, like, being on CBS News Radio was some really high-paying gig and it would be ridiculous to risk that over growing marijuana. Let me tell you, folks, I've worked in radio, and the pay ain't that great, okay? So the notion that somebody might be growing marijuana to supplement their income isn't that much of a stretch, especially someone living in Washington, D.C., a fairly expensive place to live. But again, we've got to look at this as, what is the harm here? Right? We're talking about a 60-year-old man who's a responsible person, who's working a legitimate job. He's working in CBS News Radio. It's, you know, it's not like you can imagine this guy's going to package up all that weed and sell it to a bunch of school children or something, right? So why is this a problem? Why is the neighbor complaining about the 8-foot pot plants? Does she fear the danger? Well, maybe she does. Maybe she does feel the danger of having pot plants in the backyard, knowing that people might jump the fence, armed intruders might jump the fence to try to steal it. But again, that's a problem of prohibition that makes those plants worth as much as palladium. It's the prohibition that makes it so that the cannabis that people want is scarce and expensive, hard to get. And that's what's going to lead people to want to steal it and to commit violence over it. It's time to just legalize marijuana altogether. There is no reason there should be this much value and this much hardship and heartache over a simple weed.
The Cannabis Defense Coalition has filed suit against the Washington State Medical Quality Assurance Commission, claiming that the state's agency overstepped its authority and violated the law in its handling of two recent medical cannabis petitions in the state. Washington State has had a medical marijuana law on its books since 1998. Senate Bill 6032 that passed in 2008 expanded the state's list of qualifying conditions to include Crohn's disease, hepatitis C, anorexia, and any wasting diseases, but made medical marijuana available only when unrelieved by standard treatments. Under Washington state law, citizens may petition to add an ailment to the list of conditions. This year, the Cannabis Defense Coalition did just that. They petitioned to add neuropathic pain to the law, supported by three recent clinical trials of cannabis in the treatment of neuropathic pain and chronic renal failure. The commission rejected the petition for neuropathic pain, stating, quote, neuropathic pain is not a discreetly defined condition, unquote, and that they could not find it in two online medical dictionaries. A result that happens when searching for many conditions already covered by the state's medical cannabis law, like seizure disorder. The commission also stated that many neuropathic pain patients are already covered by the intractable pain clause in Washington's medical marijuana law. But as the CDC points out, that clause requires a pain patient to try and fail every standard treatment or medication before a doctor can recommend medical cannabis. The neuropathic pain petition expressly excluded this, quote, last resort clause. Now, the commission did approve a petition to add chronic renal failure as a qualifying medical cannabis condition, but added several modifications to the petition, including a clause that authorizes them to overturn their decision at a later date. The CDC filed a separate lawsuit challenging these modifications, which they believe are illegal. Last month, new research was published in the Canadian Medical Association Journal supporting the treatment of neuropathic pain with cannabinoid medicines. Researchers from McGill University in Montreal found that cannabis helped neuropathic pain patients feel less pain and sleep better.
Wow. First of all, I'm always offended every time I hear this in any medical marijuana state where they talk about adding cannabis, but only as the last resort. This is, you know, with this neuropathic pain, you got to try every other treatment you can possibly try that's ever been recommended for pain first. And then and only then, if those don't work, do you get to use cannabis, which is so ridiculous when you consider how harmful and how many detrimental side effects most of these remedies have. I mean, even simple aspirin can cause ulcers. In the case of acetaminophens, they can cause liver failure if you're overusing them. And of course, the opioid painkillers, the Oxycontins and the Vicodins and the Darvocets and all of these really heavy duty opioids are extremely addictive. They can lead to stopping up your bowels, constipation, and all sorts of terrible things. I mean, listen to any of these commercials you hear on TV and wait for the end when they say, do not take such and such if you're using such and such. It may cause this and that and the other thing. There's a mile long of side effects with all these other remedies, and yet they want you to try those first before trying safe, effective, non-toxic cannabis that's been used for 5,000 years of human history, and the worst side effects are dry mouth and you enjoy jam bands too much. That's so ridiculous. Cannabis should not be the remedy of last resort. It should be the remedy of first resort. The first thing they teach you in medical school, the whole basis of it is first do no harm. Right? That's the Hippocratic Oath. First do no harm. So if you're going to be offering treatments to patients, especially patients with severe pain, first do no harm. First give them the remedies that can't possibly harm them. Cannabis. Then if that remedy doesn't help, then we try the Oxycontins, the Percocets, the NSAIDs. This idea that we want it to be the remedy of last resort is completely backwards. And this word parsing about, oh, well, there's not a specific design condition of neuropathic pain. How could there not be a specific condition of neuropathic pain when we are showing you the results of double-blind, placebo-controlled clinical trials testing neuropathic pain? How can they possibly come up with something to be able to study that if it's not a distinct syndrome? This is BS from the Washington medical marijuana authorities out there, who once again are just showing they want to keep it restricted. They want to try to keep as few people using cannabis as possible, because they know the more conditions they add, the more people find out how safe and effective it is, the more people that are using cannabis safely and the sky doesn't fall, the more people are willing to vote for legalization, because they're going to know somebody that maybe at their work that has medical marijuana, and they're going to start to wonder, gee, why does that person get to use medical marijuana and I don't get to use it, and yet she's just as safe a worker as I am, and she doesn't show up sick or come in with hangover excuses like some of the other workers. The more medical marijuana spreads, the less ability they have to keep marijuana prohibited, and that is what's behind these Washington medical marijuana authorities denying these conditions. Okay, folks, time to take a break, and it's kind of lonely here without Ganja John, so we'll have a toke in his honor. Light up with me. We'll be right back with your Daily Toker Tunes.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers. And nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana. And over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and coworkers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Stropp, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you tunes for Roots Monday, our celebration of the music that evolved into the popular modern music of today. We pick the best of blues, country, folk, and jazz with a 420 feel and serve it up for you every Monday. Brought to you by Cannabis Carry in Astoria, Oregon, and CannabisFantastic.com. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
Welcome back, everyone. 22 and a half after the hour, and we're rejoined by the lovely Cannabis Carrie. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Russ.
It's Roots Monday, and you've always got us a great tune for Roots Monday. But this one, you were telling me this weekend you weren't so sure you wanted to play it. What's up?
Well, it kind of grew on me. At first, I thought it was a little a negative view of cannabis, and I've come across that a few times before. But to be honest with you, it's pretty catchy, and I just can't keep it out of my head, so it gets a play.
Okay, so who is it, and what where do they come from?
Well, today's tune is one of those wonderfully quirky internet finds. It really makes me happy to be alive in the age of the internet. You know, I get to be exposed to so many artists that I never would have pre-internet. The band is called the Legendary O'Lantern Brothers, and they go by the names of Jack and Jack O'Lantern. They're from Ontario, Canada. Now, when they aren't performing in their self-proclaimed legendary band, I mean, they actually put the word legendary right in the title. I thought that was pretty clever. The Brothers is a brainchild of Kai Anto and Troy Sinister. Now, you are welcome to their wonderful arsenal of excellent, sometimes country, sometimes hard rock and roll, sometimes punk and blues catalog. They have it online. All of their music is free, and it's at ReverbNation.com. Then you have to search for Troy Sinister or the Legendary O'Lantern Brothers, or you can just click on the link on our blog at stash.normal.com. Mr. Sinister really knows what he's doing. He's been recording music and operating independent labels for other musicians up north in Canada for over a few decades. He makes no claim that he is out to reshape the world with his music, but that straight up, if you want to party and have a good time, he would love to write you a soundtrack. And from listening to the album, The Coffin Cheaters Union, I would have to agree their music is really good. If you love wolves and blues and skulls, well, then you probably already downloaded the album. So today's Toker tune is called I Don't Need You, Mary Jane, but as the song says, Mary Jane needs us. So I'll add this, vote yes on Prop 19.
Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing media and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
All right, it's time for Normal's Cannabis Community Calendar, which you can find at normal.org/calendar. Tonight at the world famous Cannabis Cafe in Portland, Oregon, Oregon Normal welcomes all veterans to the Veterans Support Group. Always takes place on the first Monday of every month. For more information, contact ornorml.org or dial 503-239-6110 for more information. On Tuesday, October 5th, Northern Michigan's Compassion Club is meeting at the Sheboygan Library in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. Sorry, Sheboygan, Michigan. My apologies. And there's a weekly medicating event taking place at the Phoenix Cafe in Hazel Park, Michigan. And Hemp TV is on the air in Albuquerque, New Mexico. For more information, check out our information on the calendar. Wednesday, October 6th, Grand Traverse Compassion Connection meeting is meeting in Traverse City, Michigan. Check out gtcompassionconnection.org for details. And Ohio Normal is having their monthly open meeting via Pal Talk online. Contact ohionormal.org for information. Thursday, October 7th, Philly Normal is having their open meeting in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania at the A Space. They always meet on the first and third Thursdays of each month. Contact phillynormal.org for more information. And this coming weekend, Saturday, October 9th, Northern Michigan's Compassion Club is meeting at the Horizon Bookstore in Petoskey, Michigan. And Oregon Normal is having their cardholders meeting, which they have twice a month. It will be at the world-famous Cannabis Cafe, 322 Southeast 82nd Avenue in Portland, Oregon. It is for Oregon Medical Marijuana Program cardholders only. Coming up in 2 weeks, Saturday, October 16th, is the Cypress Hill Smokeout in San Bernardino, California. I will be there bringing you live coverage on Normal Show Live and appearing on a panel in support of Prop 19. So check that out. And for more information on Normal's cannabis community calendar, including all of the websites, maps, email addresses, and phone numbers, check out normal.org/calendar.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Support legalizing and taxing marijuana use.
I think it's time for a debate.
Normal Show Live.
And I think that we ought to study very carefully on what other countries are doing that have legalized marijuana and other drugs.
Marijuana Nation.
I saw him hanging there afterwards, a celebration party after the Mr. Olympia smoking a joint. Did he really smoke a joint? And did he, in fact, inhale?
Saying I'm in need of change. I'm in need of change. See, I used to get high.
John said that you and him used to smoke weed together.
He was right.
He was right?
We always had a good time. We know how to enjoy ourselves.
Nothing to lose. Now I can't get high. Can't get high.
Come on, Cohagen. You got what you want. Give these people air.
Days come to pass and the nights tend to last much longer than they should.
I'll be back.
See, I used to get high. The end of the day, and I used to get high. That time's ticking away, and I used to get high. Nothing to lose, now I can't get high. Can't get high.
Legalization.
Decriminalization.
Lowest law enforcement priority.
Medical marijuana.
Ganja sacrament.
Consumer cannabis.
Industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that interact nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare,
the economy,
global climate change,
law enforcement in prisons,
immigration,
religion,
free speech,
energy policy,
and war. Now, we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our Normal Show Live Cannabis Conversations.
We bring you Dr. Harry Levine from Queens College discussing the racism in enforcing marijuana laws at Normal National Conference.
All right, we're getting ready to begin our next panel, which is the new Jim Crow marijuana prohibition. Our first speaker is Harry Levine, PhD from Queens College. We have Ms. Jasmine Tyler from Drug Policy Alliance, Neil Franklin, Executive Director of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, LEAP, yes, and Ms. Alice Huffman, President of the California NAACP. So we've got a great panel. Let's get ready, and we're going to start off with Harry.
It's an honor to be here, to be on this panel. What we really have here is the first major league coming together of the marijuana reform movement, of the movement against marijuana prohibition and drug prohibition in general, and the civil rights movement. It's absolutely important and absolutely historical, and I'm just delighted to be here. We have Alice Huffman from the California NAACP, who has made history. And I'll talk a little bit about that. We've got Neil Franklin, the head of the of LEAP, an extraordinary stepping up at an extraordinary moment. And Jasmine Tyler from Drug Policy Alliance, all hosted by Mara Martinez. We have extraordinary people of color panel here. I'm the white nerd who gets to run you through some slides and tell you a little bit about what's happened. And I want to talk about my own research and what some other people have been doing. Let's see if I can figure this one out here. All right, this is normal's marijuana arrest in the United States. You see it rises in the early 1970s, kind of levels out, drops in the early 1990s. That's because of crack, because the police were focused heavily on crack cocaine, not because they got nice about marijuana. And a stunning, absolutely breathtaking rise ever since, going up and up and up. We are still in the middle of a major marijuana arrest crusade in the United States. This is what happened in New York City, where I come from. Marijuana was decriminalized in New York in 1977, and the police sort of respected it for about 20 years. And then starting in 1997 with Giuliani, it rose and rose, dropped a little bit after 2001 because the police had some other things to do, but has climbed again. 2009 isn't on there, but it's up to 46,000, second highest year ever. Here's we're going to move them fast here. Here's four mayors of New York City and the average marijuana arrest per year for each one of them. Bloomberg has now passed Giuliani. Let's talk about race. This is a United States government national survey, household survey, national survey, ages 18 to 25, whites, blacks, Latinos, going back to 2003, you can go back further than that, young whites use marijuana at higher rates than blacks and Latinos. It is true everywhere. It is true for every year. It is true across the board. Whites use marijuana at higher rates than young blacks and Latinos. This is the arrest in New York City, two decades. About a little over 50% of the people in New York are black or Latino. About nearly 90% of the arrests in New York City are blacks and Latinos. Non-Hispanic whites, as the census calls them, are about 36% of the population in New York. In 2009, they were less than 10% of the arrests. This gives you a breakdown by years, going back to 1986, I think it is. The 2009 figures, again, are up, and apparently, by all counts, the 2010 figures are up. We may even break the Giuliani's record year of 2000. Blacks are getting arrested in New York City at seven times the rate of whites. Latinos are getting arrested in New York City at three to four times the rate of whites. Overwhelmingly young people. How do they do it? The cops heavily patrol in New York City and most other cities disproportionately in only certain neighborhoods called high crime neighborhoods. Overwhelmingly, these are low-income black and Latino neighborhoods. They do loads of stop and frisks. They stop cars. They stop pedestrians. They pat them down and they search them. They illegally go into their pockets or they trick them into bringing out marijuana and they make arrests. We're making about 100 a day in New York City for over 13 years, well into the 14th year right now. There's somebody being stopped a few blocks from my house, actually. These are pictures from Flickr on the web from New York City. We've gotten some very good coverage. Deborah Small and I did a report for the New York Civil Liberties Union called Marijuana Arrest Crusade. We got some very good coverage of it. We've done some other stuff. We've tried to make noise and raise hell in New York about it, and the newspapers are very reluctant to cover it, but columnists will. The newspapers are afraid of the police departments, and they're in debt to them. But columnists have some freedom. Jim Dwyer is a Metro Desk columnist for the New York Times, and he wrote this absolutely terrific piece last December, less than a year ago, "White Smoke Pot, But Blacks Get Arrested," is the story of New York City and, as I'm going to show you, most other cities in the United States. What's happening in New York is happening everywhere. And the next thing I'm going to show you is data that I have not publicly released. It's been privately distributed. We're going to come out with a report probably in 2011, in the spring on this. You probably can't read all these names, but this is 44 major cities in the United States. There's Baltimore, Atlanta, Baltimore up at the top of the list. You got San Antonio. We got Pittsburgh, Philadelphia. You go all the way down. In every major city in the United States, blacks are getting arrested at 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 10 times the rate of whites. In every major city in the United States, in counties, across the board, up and down, over and under, everywhere. This shows you the percentage of the population in each of those cities, who is black, and the percentage of the marijuana arrestees who are black. And again, blacks constitute somewhere between 10, 15%, 25% of the population, and 50 to 75% of the arrests. Everywhere. And they're all young people. The blue line is teenagers, about 25 to 40%. The yellow line is the 20 to 24-year-olds. It's another 20%, 25%. And the last line, the black line, is 26 to 20, 25 to 29. 65 to 75, 85% of the people being arrested in the United States are under 30 years of age. Mostly, again, overwhelmingly disproportionately black and Latino teenagers. At April, I now work with Lawrence Siegel, formerly of the ACLU. In April, we had heard from a fellow by the name of Rob Rooks of the NAACP that Alice Huffman, the head of the California NAACP, was going to endorse Proposition 19. Because I've been doing this for a while, because we've been working on this, we knew what that meant. And I have that national FBI. This is FBI data. The previous data I've been showing you here, let's do that again. This is FBI data, Uniform Crime Report data. It does not include Latinos. The FBI, federal government, does not count Latinos as a racial group. So actually, folded in those pink lines for the white people are all the Latino arrests as well. The racial disparities are even greater than this shows. But we had this information for California, and we knew what it was going to be. I had not met Alice Huffman and did not talk to her. I met her only this last August for the first time. Terrific, but I followed her very closely. And we knew what she was going to do in coordination with the Drug Policy Alliance, with the people from the Marijuana Initiative, Dale Geringer, Chris Conrad, Nicky McNorris, that did terrific jobs in sort of preparing the grounds. There was an astonishing press conference held on June 29th. I want to tell you about that. But these are the graphs that we put into this, made a little report for California called Targeting Blacks. In California, for marijuana. This is the 25 largest counties in California, 90% of the population. In every one of them, blacks are getting arrested at double, triple, or quadruple the rate of whites. This is the percentage of blacks in the county population and the percentage of blacks who are arrested for marijuana in each one of those 25 counties. And again, everywhere. Everywhere. And this probably a couple hundred police departments represented in these graphs. These are counties. So this is not a fluke. This is not the problem of sort of individual racist police officers someplace. This is what we call the system-wide phenomenon occurring in every county and in nearly every police department. It's across the board. We released a report when Alice Huffman had her press conference. There was a report there released through the Drug Policy Alliance. Stephen Gutwillig did a fabulous job in helping us put this together. It's on the web. You can find all this stuff. You can Google my name or Google Targeting Blacks for Marijuana, and you'll find this report. And we raised a shitstorm. Alice created news. The San Francisco Chronicle wrote a terrific piece. California NAACP backs marijuana measure. Capital Weekly, the big newspaper of the Sacramento, the California capital, did a very good story about this. The Washington Post covers the California NAACP and backing legalization. The Los Angeles Times. LA Weekly pulled out the LA County data from our report. Talks about how in LA County blacks are 10% of the population, 40% of the arrests in LA County. Reason Magazine, Reason.com, God bless him, Jacob Sullum, I sent him the stuff and he put it up almost immediately, blasted it out. Alice wrote a fantastic op-ed piece put out in the Huffington Post, a really terrific, important piece that needs to be widely distributed. CNN covered what happened. Washington Post, a syndicated columnist, did a major piece. California, the odious history of marijuana laws. Again, because the California NAACP and Alice Huffman had come out and done this. I think that sometimes people wince when I say this, but I want to call Alice Huffman the Rosa Parks of marijuana reform in the civil rights movement. She said enough. She said enough. What? She said that. She's right to her own line. She said Rosa Parks sat down. She said, I stood up. A number of black journalists and black leaders came out, stood up after Alice did, had not done so before. This is a piece in the Huffington Post by a fellow who runs a thing called Black Commentator, serious sort of political website. Julian Bond spoke out because of Alice Huffman. Hillary Shelton, the NAACP's lobbyist on Capitol Hill, has been privately absolutely supportive, but because of Alice, he came out. The National Black Police Association, I've been attending their meetings for years, they're a terrific group of people, they knew about this, but because of Alice, they came out. And the coverage that's just a taste. We did this report on New York City, did a 100-page report. We got some pretty good coverage, but we did a 12-page report and Alice and the press conference, and this has blasted all over the place, including The Economist talking about this. The Economist reports that the early polling showed blacks in California were opposed to Proposition 19. They are now, I believe, the single strongest demographic group in California in favor of Proposition 19. We have a police department data, which we're going to try to release in a report within the next month, a follow-up to this one to blast another hole in this god-awful system. We have California state data. There's a real problem with Latino data. Police many places systematically misrepresent code Latinos as whites, so they don't show up in the criminal justice database, especially for the marijuana arrests. But we're going to try to put together something for Southern California, showing in LA County and some of the counties around there that Latinos are getting arrested at substantially higher rates than whites as well. Try to punch another hole in that system. Anybody is in cities and counties where the substantial black population, you can find me, come talk to me. We have some data. We want to make alliances with people, and we want to continue to push this. I think that the wall has fallen down. The ceiling has collapsed. The civil rights movement is going to come more and more into this. There's a fight within that movement. Make no mistake about it. There is a fight within that movement. There are pastors who ministers, the strong constituency of the civil rights movement, and they've been fiercely anti-drug. That sometimes takes interesting turns. There's a guy named Ron Elder who came out immediately after Alice demanding she resign from the NAACP, that she was a disgrace. He attacked her up, down. At first I thought, what the hell is this guy getting all this noise and attention? But he was so foolish. he was really a, sort of a clown. That actually he made it easier. And so he and Alice could go on television together, and Alice just chewed him up. She chewed him up, she chewed him down, and spit him out again. The New York Times did a big story about this, leading with the Reverend Ron, but given Alice and the story legs and so on. So sometimes even that works in our favor as well. And it's a really terrific thing. The other piece of the civil rights movement that it seems to me is has been a resistance here is that the civil rights movement was founded in the early 20th century, or the NAACP in particular, to remove barriers to equality for education, for housing, for jobs, schools. And we marijuana reformers come along and drug policy reformers come along and say, you know, blacks are getting arrested at much higher rates than whites for possessing and using marijuana or other drugs. And they say, let's get this straight. Black drug users and drug addicts are getting treated unfairly compared to white drug users and drug addicts. Our riffraff is getting treated worse than your riffraff. That's not our issue. We're about removing barriers, not making sure that the riffraff get treated equally. That's the old guard. But there is a new generation within the civil rights movement, within the NAACP, and the staff is absolutely with us on this one, and more people are going to become too. So welcome to the brand new age of marijuana reform when the movement becomes colored.
If you like what you hear and would like to donate to the cause, send your check or money order to Normal Show Live, 1600 K Street Northwest, Suite 501, Washington, D.C., 20006. Your donation is a tax-deductible gift to the Normal Foundation and will be used to help support this online media. Thank you.
Guy as Conan the Barbarian on What's Best in Life, to crush your enemies and to hear the lamentation of their women. Cheech.
Who is Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yes. Cheech again.
Who is Al Pacino?
Right. Cheech.
What is Pillow Talk?
Right. Cheech.
What is Never Never Land?
Yes. Cheech.
What is Camelot?
Yes. Cheech.
What is a baster?
Yes. You're the winner today. Your charity will get $50,000 and Aisha and Anderson's charities $25,000 each.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Welcome back, everyone. 52 after the hour, and oh, we got some more tossed salad to tell you about. Mark it down in your list of businesses you will no longer patronize. The San Francisco area Canny Bus. Yes, with a month to go before California legalizes marijuana under Prop 19, there are still some of these cockroaches scurrying around trying to scare cannabis consumers into voting against their own self-interest. The latest one is this Canny Bus, which presents no on Proposition 19 for better reasons than you think. Now, I don't suppose it would surprise anyone what business the Canny Bus is in.
Hi, my name is Mario, director of the Canny Bus. We cater to the elderly and special need medical marijuana patients. We are a California nonprofit based out of San Francisco, California, and deliver to the Greater Bay Area by appointment only. We offer top shelf premium products at a fair price, and we offer a no question money back guarantee.
Okay, so the Canny Bus is a delivery dispensary that is against Prop 19. Tell me more, what is a fair price?
Current members can mix and match four strains, four quarters, or your choice each, for a $320 donation. Blueberry Kush, now available for a donation amount of $17.50 a gram. Tom's Purple, donation amount $20 a gram. Or Romulan, donation amount $15 per gram.
Okay, $320 an ounce or $15 to $20 a gram. I wonder why the Cannibus would be so against Prop 19 legalizing for everyone to grow their own home garden, to share an ounce with their friends, and to open up a whole bunch of low-cost marijuana stores in the Bay Area. I wonder why they want you to vote against Prop 19. Yeah, that's just about it. So I left a comment for them on their blog, and I don't think they'll post it, so I'm going to read it to you here on Normal Show Live. The cannabis is so misinformed about Prop 19. Please, for analysis and interpretation of Prop 19 by J. David Nick, the California attorney who has never lost a cannabis case, who defended Steve Cubby for 200 plants, and whose defense of Dennis Perone established the right to collectively cultivate and sell marijuana, please visit our blog at stash.normal.org. Just type in David Nick into the search engine, and you will find the best analysis of Prop 19 on the web. But let me just run through what the Cannibus has put on their website as why you should vote against Prop 19. First of all, they say, quote, "If you're a medical marijuana patient under 21, you will simply be prohibited from using medical cannabis altogether." That is a complete lie. Prop 19 controls personal use of marijuana, not medical. Anyone below the age of 21 will still be able to get a Prop 215 recommendation. "If you provide medical cannabis to someone between the ages of 18 and 20, you will be facing up to 7 months in prison." Well, that's a partial lie. If you provide cannabis to an 18 to 20-year-old who does not have a Prop 215 recommendation, you'll face possible jail time, just like you would if you provided alcohol to someone aged 18 to 20 and they ended up harming someone. "If you provide medical cannabis to a patient under the age of 18, you're looking at up to 7 years in prison and monetary fines." Well, that's a complete misreading. If someone under 18 has a Prop 215 rec, you face no time. But if you pass personal cannabis to someone under 18, that's what the current law is now. Prop 19 is not adding a penalty for people under 18. That penalty is already the law now. What this writer on the Cannibus misunderstood is when you propose an initiative and you want to amend that initiative, you have to list what the current law is and then what you're adding to that law, which is usually in bold-faced or underlined. So the parts that aren't bold-faced or underlined, that's the part that's already in the law today. "It will be illegal and punished to consume marijuana anywhere but in the privacy of your own home." Complete lie. Medical rights are unchanged by Prop 19, which is carefully constructed to affect personal, not medical, use of cannabis. You won't be able to smoke personal pot in public, except at places where cities grant a license for that activity, which means after Prop 19, we could have Amsterdam-style coffee houses in California. "If there happens to be a minor in that home during the time you're medicating, that is a punishment infringement as well." Complete lie. Medical rights are not changed by Prop 19, which is carefully constructed to only affect personal, not medical, use of cannabis. Your indoor medical garden is unaffected by Prop 19. "How many other legal acts do you have to get your landlord's permission to partake in?" Well, I don't know. Let's see. Owning a pet, installing a waterbed, installing a hot tub, installing track lighting, planting an outdoor garden, installing the mounting bracket for a flat screen TV, installing a satellite dish to the side of the wall, or anything else that might be considered a high voltage or big mess risk, like a personal indoor marijuana garden. "Only a small group of big-time grow operations in Oakland, the people who wrote Prop 19, will be allowed to grow and sell cannabis." Untrue. Prop 19 gives every one of California's 478 incorporated cities the right to decide if and how they wish to regulate their commercial, not medical, sales and cultivation. If you want to be able to grow and sell cannabis commercially, start lobbying your local representatives. Just because Oakland has four $211,000 licensed mega grows doesn't mean that your city has to do what Oakland did. "Under the Obama administration, the federal government has reined in the DEA in regards to state-approved medical marijuana legislation." Well, now, that's completely misleading. Just ask Jovan Jackson about how much the Holder memo and Prop 215 have protected him. If you want to severely hamstring the Fed's ability to go after patients, you'll vote yes on Prop 19. It contains a law that forbids any state and local law enforcement from seizing, attempting to seize, or even threatening to seize lawfully produced marijuana, or cooperating with the feds who are trying to seize marijuana. The feds don't have the manpower to go after what exists after Prop 215 and Prop 19 without local support. They'll never have enough manpower to go after Prop 19. We got more of this Cannibus debunking that we got to get, but it'll have to take place in the second hour because we're out of time. Thanks for joining us for Cannabis Carry. I'm Radical Russ, and for everyone here at the Normal Foundation, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow at 1 p.m. Pacific time. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you giant, you